Ladies and gentlemen, nothing is ever going to be the same. I know you've heard that a lot. This much is true. I'm in Melbourne, Australia, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I swear. I know. I've been on tape and talked to you as if I was from so many different places this year, but this is live right now as you're hearing it, unless your station is delaying it or forgetting to play the tape. I am in Melbourne, Australia, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning. And like every other broadcast you've heard this week, this is going to be a very different version of this show. There will be no prepared comedy. There may be some unprepared comedy. But it's basically a guy and maybe another guy. No, definitely another guy. He's been checked. Sitting around talking in the night about the stuff that's been going on and the stuff we've been seeing. Now, you think of Australia, one thinks of Australia as a relatively exotic place. Kangaroos and the crikey crocodile hunter guy, whom they don't even have here. I believe his broadcast premiered tonight in Australia. They don't even know him yet. They don't have his action figures on sale in stores like we do. But it's not that exotic a place, aside from that fact. They have permit parking, making it difficult to go where you want to go. They had Dan and Peter all this week, much of this week. Not to the extent I know that you did back home. And here, the way you know you're in Australia and not at home is because even in the midst of all of it, even with Dan and Peter and Tom, they were interrupted for commercials. A lovely reminder of normalcy, especially when the commercials were as they were tonight that I saw just before coming here. A commercial for a Time Life package of videotapes, Secrets of World War II. Man, nothing seemed more obsolete than that right about now. Like, we want to learn about we want to see video of black and white explosions. Thank you very much. You know you're in Australia, though, also because at the self-service gas stations, you don't have to pay first. That's the way it is right now. It will change. It will all change. You know, in the United States, one of the things you used to hear people say a lot, because we're in a different age now, when they'd go to, let's say, the Super Bowl, or to the Graceland Vigil on the occasion of the anniversary of Elvis Presley's death. Some event like that, like those two. And you'd see them being interviewed, and people would be asked, well, why are you here? I mean, at the Super Bowl, you know why they're there, to do business. But at let's say, the vigil at Graceland. And people would say, well, I just wanted to be part of history. Ladies and gentlemen, we now know what it feels like to be part of history. I think the trivial was better, really, all things considered. But we are now part of history. Hello, welcome to the show.
Face through colored glass.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's war. We've been told that officially by the President of the United States. And there's more than one kind of war going on, according to one of the news services. There's a flag war among the cable news networks. CNN, I'm reading now. So don't get mad at me. CNN declared itself the victor, having put its animated American flag near the bottom of the screen at midnight Wednesday. MSNBC and Fox News Channel followed suit Thursday morning. "I'm thrilled," this is a quote, "I'm thrilled we were the first network to put up the American flag," said Garth Ansier, vice president of programming at Turner Broadcasting Systems, which includes CNN. We all started hearing about friends and neighbors who were buying flags. Walter Isaacson, head of CNN, said he didn't want anyone getting an American flag on before us. He ordered the animated American flag Wednesday night, unquote. Garth Ansier, still, at this late date, ladies and gentlemen, the only American network television executive who's ever apologized to me for anything. So they're bragging about being the first to have the flag. Although, interestingly, you'll be the judge. On CNN International, which shares a lot of the broadcasting of CNN at this point in time. They don't have the flag. You may have noticed the not-so-subtle shift in the way CNN identifies the story, the name they give to the story. It started out attack on America. Then some point it's become America's new war. Now, it's one thing for the president to announce we're at war, but for CNN to decide it, and also America at war, maybe America prepares for war, I don't know. But using the single most potent come-on word in the history of American advertising, new. You know, it's like, all right, it's America's new and improved war would be the next step. If you really feel they have to compete. Now, let's just take, if we may, a step backwards. Or back, not backwards, but back, gain a little distance. I've got plenty right now. I can share some with you. I think it was Saturday. Of course, I have no sense of what day anything happened because I'm on Australian time. If I refer to it, it will confuse you. So this week, we saw the spectacle of, in great and wonderful solidarity with the United States, the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace for the first time, being accompanied by the playing of the Star-Spangled Banner. That was followed up, I believe yesterday, somebody's time, by the final Proms concert. It's a London cultural landmark, the Proms concerts every summer. And the final one is a very big traditional event, musical event, cultural event in London. And an American conductor was presiding for the first time, Leonard Slatkin, and they began the Proms concert again with the Star-Spangled Banner. Ladies and gentlemen, the last time that a building in Washington was partially destroyed by hostile fire, it came from the British, who I believe set fire to the White House during the War of 1812. And less than 200 years later, they're playing our national anthem. Now, I'm just saying, in 200 years, who knows? Maybe in Kabul, they'll be singing the Star-Spangled Banner. You know, it is inevitable to cast your mind ahead to where we are after this. Right now, Bernard Weinrub in Sunday's New York Times reports that Hollywood executives are saying that ideas that they would have entertained, word chosen with care, just a few days ago, are unthinkable now. Ideas that involve explosions or people dying. There's going to be a lot more escapist fare, a lot more comedy, a lot more family drama, a lot more patriotism. They're comparing it to the output of Hollywood during World War II. But somewhere today, there's a kid who's going to grow up to be the next Jerry Bruckheimer, who's going to due for September 9th, 2001. And yes, we really are in the new millennium. The mathematicians were right. This was the year. Who's going to do for September 9th, 2001 what our Jerry Bruckheimer did for Pearl Harbor? We're hearing now about the change at America's airports. I am a big, big fan of show business, particularly bad show business. And You know, everybody's got to do something at a time like this. But the banning of curbside check-in is being advertised as security. Ladies and gentlemen, it's show business. I don't want to tell you whether it's good or bad. You can decide for yourselves. But it is show business. I had an ironic airport security experience just about 3 weeks ago. As you know, if you're a regular listener to this program, and after today, you may not be. But if you are, you know that about 3 months ago, I experienced a bout of tendonitis in my elbow from playing, who cares why. And I was given a routine of exercises to do by my physical therapist, don't you know? Not my personal trainer, please. My physical therapist. And it involved lifting weights and doing some side-to-side manipulation of the arm with a baton, a weighted baton. He said, you know, to do this at home, you could use a hammer. And I was flying to San Francisco one day. I thought, well, I want to keep my exercise routine up. So I packed in my carry-on bag a 10-pound free weight and a hammer. Flew to San Francisco, no problem. Flying back from San Francisco, I'm trying to get on an earlier flight. So the flight I'm going to be on is not the flight I have a boarding pass for. And the screener in the X-ray sees in the X-ray machine the image of the hammer. Says, what's that? I said, that's a hammer. Take it out, please. I take it out. And as I look at him looking at me and the hammer, he said, I can give this to you back to you at the gate. What flight are you on? Now I'm doing the math. I've got a hammer in my carry-on bag, and I'm getting on a flight that is not the same flight as I have a boarding pass for. I know I'm fitting into somebody's profile immediately. So I said, keep the hammer. What occurred to me at the time was that he took the hammer but left me with a 10-pound free weight. So even then, it was called security. But basically, it was show business. On the subject of everything's going to change, well, we know that's an overstatement. The night, again, time doesn't translate very well. Hours into this story, Dan Rather was on the air and correcting one of his correspondents who was giving a casualty number, which is fine. You're supposed to do that, I guess. But he couldn't resist saying, we pride ourselves on pinpoint accuracy here. In the middle of all of this, he could not stop himself from bragging, even after we know, following election night, that, you know, pinpoint accuracy would be a nice thing to aim for, but some things we know will change. We're going to be waving some civil liberties goodbye. When flying into Australia, I was amazed to see three sniffer dogs come by my group of people as we were going into immigration. And the woman in front of me was petrified of dogs. Well, get used to that. The CIA is going to get some powers back. That will change. But again, some things won't change. You probably know this story already, but for those who don't, Dateline Washington. It's Dateline Washington only because it appears in the Washington Post. This event did not happen in Washington. Television evangelists Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson said liberal civil liberties groups, feminists, homosexuals, and abortion rights supporters bear partial responsibility for Tuesday's terrorist attacks because their actions have turned God's anger against America. God continues to lift the curtain and allow the enemies of America to give us probably what we deserve, said Falwell, appearing on the Christian Broadcasting Network 700 Club. Not 700 Mouse Street, this is still the original 700 Club, hosted by Robertson. Jerry, that's my feeling, Robertson responded. I think we've just seen the antechamber to terror. We haven't even begun to see what they can do to the major population. Unquote, Robertson. Falwell said the American Civil Liberties Union has got to take a lot of blame for this, again winning Robertson's agreement. Well, yes. Then Falwell broadened his blast to include the federal courts and others who he said were throwing God out of the public square. He added, the abortionists have got to bear some burden for this because God will not be mocked. And when we destroy 40 million little innocent babies, we make God mad. I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who've tried to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and say, you helped this happen. Falwell said in an interview afterwards, in response to a White House official who called the remarks inappropriate, he was making a theological statement, not a legal statement. I put all the blame legally and morally on the actions of the terrorist, he said. But he said America's secular and anti-Christian environment left us open to our Lord's decision not to protect. When a nation deserts God and expels God from the culture, the result is not good. Robertson was not available for comment. Our God's better than their God.
Thinks it's best to criticize his own kind, an animal of greed, best to sow that social seed. I thought by my thoughts all would come clear to me. Yeah, I can shoot a gun, maybe I should join the army. Is there a quiet place to lie? Maybe watch this all go by. Wonder how can we survive wasting energy? Where's the enemy? I'd soldier on and walk the curvy line so straight, but I would fall behind. Maybe I am not so blinded. You talk of so much pity that is self-related, blaming not yourself, said the fault lies somewhere else. Repeat it when the feeling's high. I wish it all could just rely on the depth of you and I, wasting energy. Where's the enemy?
this all go by? I wonder how can we survive wasting energy? Where's the enemy? Repeat it when the feeling's high. I wish it all could just rely on the depth of you and I, wasting energy. Where's the enemy?
One of the phrases I've heard most often this week is, I'm being joined by, as if I'm about to fall apart, but I'm being joined. I'm being joined by, at this moment, because, you know, enough of the monologue, a gentleman I believe it's fair to describe as Australia's number one comic. At least, I know he was described that way at the Friars Club in New York one time. Santo Cellaro.
Hi, Harry. I was described as Australia's number one comic by a guy called Alan Allen, but I'm not from Wagga Wagga.
All right. Or Walla Walla. But you're actually a writer, director, actor, filmmaker. What else?
At this time of the night, you can call me anything you want. I'm a crocodile hunter.
Okay, crocodile hunter.
Crikey! There's a blue-tongued lizard right here. We spoke to the crocodile hunter about a week ago on our television show before you made your appearance last. In fact, the week before you appeared on our television show, The Panel,
yes,
live on a Wednesday night, Steve Irwin came on, and I have never seen more impressed American guests.
Oh, man.
We had a guy called Danny Ainge.
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He was stunned. He came on after Steve Irwin, and he said, man, I got Shaq walking around the house, you know, Jordan, everybody, Magic, you know. My kids, that's just them. When I get back and tell them I've been on the same show as Steve Irwin, they will just, like, slap me.
It's amazing. I have to say, by the way, apropos The Panel, which is this fabulous show that you and your partners in Working Dog, this very creative Australian group of writer, actor, director, everything.
Keep going. It's okay. Yeah.
Every Wednesday night on live television, which I want to talk about in a minute. The rules on this show are a little less loose there. I just want to remind you, we can't say any of the swear words that you can get away with on The Panel. But there was a very interesting moment. This is a live show that talks about current events. And there was a very interesting moment Wednesday morning. The show goes on Wednesday night. And I came into your offices. I was supposed to be a guest on the show. And you guys were discussing whether to do the show this week. Tell me about that.
Well,
you know, share that
it was bit. It was a weird moment. It's like, what do you do when there is an earth-shattering event? Do you just go ahead and try and talk about about that event in the same way as we talk about events every week? And we just tried to put ourselves in our viewers' shoes and just thought, you know what? If I was at home on Wednesday night Australian time, whatever that is. I think I'd be wanting to see what happens. And also, it's a bit kind of weird when you can't be, you're not going to do wisecracks about it. In fact, we weren't even going to have a live audience in for it. We were just going to discuss it. But it's a little hard to do when there are still cell phone calls coming from, seven floors under.
But now, the show does not involve people telling jokes, however.
No.
Jay Leno has announced that he's going to be doing a lot more Viagra jokes. Because what else? Yeah, he said that. You know, he talked to Johnny Carson.
He's getting his Viagra joke quota up.
Way up. But what stunned me was you, all the principals of this group, who are also the performers on the air, were sitting around having this probably hour and a half long discussion. And there was a producer in the room, and she was taking notes.
For a show that wasn't going to go to air.
Well, but just she wasn't saying a word. No, she was taking notes.
Yeah.
In America, the producers would be talking and the talent would be sitting there taking notes.
Oh, is that right?
No, yeah.
That's why we only hire mute people.
Oh, it was amazing.
With great writing skills.
No, it's when people ask me why I come to Australia to do that show, that's it, right there. It was a very... And the conversation went back and forth. People changed positions. You know, people were starting out thinking maybe we should do it. You were, I don't know.
I didn't know what had happened. I was watching the wrestling the night before. It was one. We actually almost should have televised what that discussion, because it was kind of interesting in itself. I don't know. It's so difficult. And also, we have the added problem of being so far away.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Bill Clinton still comes out here for fresh meat, but we are so far away that we are just going, what is appropriate in this situation? I mean, we are far away. I mean, it's not... But at the same time, you know, Australians have actually been lost here.
Yes.
You know?
I've been amazed by people coming up to me. I mean, I mentioned the self-service gas station. I pumped some gas tonight. And the guy ran out to say, you know, you don't pay first here, and then started a conversation about that. Do you think in the days of this week that have passed that it started out Australians feeling very distant and they feel closer, more involved as a result of your prime minister standing next to George Bush and saying, I'm with you, mate?
Did you see? He got such a big bear hug from Colin Powell that his comb over actually went the opposite way.
No.
But no. I think the attack on New York is attack. When you attack New York, you're not attacking New York. You're attacking every city in the world, really, I guess.
Every civilized city. Yeah.
Well, so I guess it did start off as like, wow, an amazing thing on CNN that you can. You know, again, you're going, oh my God, we're seeing a war unfold on television.
Persian Gulf War.
It was a little bit like that. But this time the pictures were a lot more freaky.
Mm-hmm.
And you're quite right. I think everyone now, within a short amount of time, just realized it was a pretty big thing. Everybody's talking about it here. But it's in a weird way because we're still objective enough we can say certain things or think certain things. Actually, many of us don't actually say them because they're kind of like difficult things to say because our cities themselves weren't attacked. But all those things that we've said about in the past about, you know, the Arab-Israeli conflict and or the conflict in Ireland, and you go, how can this cycle of hate keep going? Why do people want to keep retaliating? Why do they? I mean, can't they see that they're just causing more and more misery? It's funny, now it's happening in the United States and all the talk is for retaliation but it's just an interesting thing. It's an interesting exercise in what happens in human nature. Your first thought is not, oh my God, so much misery has been created elsewhere in the world through warfare for whatever reasons that your natural reaction is, no, got to hit back.
Got to do something.
I was watching, I was just news fatigued last night. I couldn't watch anything else, and I started watching the wrestling again, which went ahead from Houston, WWF, and they had all the wrestlers actually giving their commentary on the...
Really?
Yeah. And I think the expression, let them have it, occurred a lot of times. But, you know, it's weird looking at it back here and seeing people... And you know, hearing what you said before about Jerry Falwell saying, you know, who should take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting back, you go, well, hang on. If you walk down the street and someone just thumps you in the nose, of course they're unjustified, but after the emotional reaction, you sort of think, well, hang on, did I walk in a kind of funny way? Did I accidentally
What did I do?
Give the...
Yeah.
Did I, you know, so you think, please, I hope... So, you know, politicians there don't sort of go on this crazy thing of like, this is just a fight against total evil, and it's just so black and white. There is not even one single 0.5% of responsibility that we need to...
Let me push you forward on that a little bit, because I know you're, aside from being Australia's number one comic, you're a thoughtful guy, and you actually read. When this started, we were all sitting around your offices talking about, well, obviously there's going to be an anti-Muslim backlash, which we've seen both in America and here. I think I was the one who opined that there's going to be then an anti-Semitic backlash of some sort in America, because this is going to be blamed on the U.S. relationship with Israel. And sure enough, I got an email to that effect the next day. I'm on a lot of weird lists. But do you think, what you've read and what you've seen, do you think this is a hatred of America based more on America's political position, America's stance in regard to the Arab-Israeli conflict or whatever other political issue you might, you know, or American culture, what America stands for in terms of, yes, Coke and McDonald's and Gap and hedonism, materialism, individualism, secularism. Is that really what's being hated here, or is it in real policies in the political world?
I don't think it's real policies. I believe, as an outsider, I just think that it's just a frustration, and it was maybe, it just got to breaking point of America's not the center of the world. It's not the center of the world. And it's like, how come when things happen to us, no one really cares, but when things happen in America, we proved it. When things happen in America, it's a big deal. But we've been going through this for ages, and how come we don't get the same kind of treatment? It's kind of, for an outsider to come into America, it's amazing how there's not actually all that much world news in newspapers. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's very, when I walk in there, I feel like nothing much is happening at all anywhere in the world. Not my country, the country where my parents came from, not anywhere. So I don't know, maybe. I guess if you come from, you know, either a repressed background or, you know, a fanatical environment, that in the end just gets to you, and you just feel desperate. You just say, I just want to say, no, we're here, and we're also a superpower in our own kind of poor way.
Yeah.
That's,
you know, talking about things, the absence of interest in the world that's been a tradition in America, except for if you look back at American history, the Cold War was this tiny little period where we pretended to be interested in the world. And apropos of everything's going to change, you know, my question would be, are we going to see a five-part series on the history of Western nations in Afghanistan on Dateline NBC anytime in the near future? We may, but I doubt it. You know, Afghanistan's an interesting place. A couple of countries have ended up not feeling very good about their military involvement there.
It sounds like, you know, it's like, you know, when everyone tries to invade Russia or something, you know, Napoleon and Hitler and all that kind of stuff. It feels like it's a place, you know, go there at your own peril.
Yeah, and Afghanistan has humbled they humbled the British and then they humbled the Russians. But this leads to another thing about America that I heard this week, and as an outsider, I'd like to bounce it off you, just verbally, nothing to damage an ACL. More than one person has said this week, America has lost its innocence, and this gets said about once a decade. Mm-hmm. We lost our innocence in Vietnam. We lost our innocence when President Kennedy was shot. They probably said it when we joined World War II.
When Princess Diana died.
Princess Diana died. We Americans, tell me how this impinges on you. We Americans seem to be in love with the idea of our own innocence.
Wow, yeah, I thought you were about to ask me whether you'd lost the innocence, but yeah, that's an interesting question. Wow. So you actually, are you saying that that you Americans actually love the concept of being naive and not really knowing what goes on?
Yeah.
Let's live in this little...
Yeah, the idea of being a continental nation shielded by two oceans and not having to mind about the affairs of the world. George Washington said, avoid entangling alliances, has nurtured a sense of national innocence. We look at, and it goes all through the culture, you look at America's attitude towards children.
Mm-hmm.
They're innocents. The children are innocent. Well, I mean, look at children on a playground. Remember your own childhood. Children can be the meanest, cruelest people on the planet.
Well, look, I mean, you're asking a guy who lives in Australia, we're renowned for our cynicism, of like Italian parentage, who really just don't give a much about anything. Oh, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As in, so it's kind of funny when we look at, you know, even...
But you look at the American culture all the time.
I think that there is a kind of there is a kind of innocence, and I hope I don't offend anybody, but there is a bit of a naivety about you know, life. And but I can't tell whether I'm being too hard there. You know, sometimes you look at that and you go, you know what? People singing spontaneously on Capitol Hill, now that's real. You know what I mean? As opposed to that's corny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're conditioned to accept American culture, but at the same time sort of try and be a bit out of it and call it corny. But I don't, that is a really difficult question. And it's an important question because, because innocence, maybe that's why America is so strong as a, you know, has so much influence on people, because it insists on its innocence, which in itself is a pure thing. But I do think that in some way that has been lost or compromised. Now, things have changed, I think, and it's not just I know that we've heard it a lot, but I do think that when that amount of people die on your doorstep, I think your outlook towards the way people harm you and help you has to change.
Yeah. It's just hard to accept the notion of American innocence necessarily, from knowing that we're the country that invented the term collateral damage.
I know. It's kind of a weird contradiction when you insist on innocence and your attitude towards children, whereas at the same time, as you say, you know, the tentacles of America sort of, you know, extend all over the world and beyond, perhaps.
Yeah. There's something else going on that's related. The American airline industry is saying that it's in grave danger. The patient is dying very quickly, says the chairman and chief executive of Continental Airlines. We're all going to be bankrupt before the end of the year. Now,
well, ours is already at the morgue. It's already got a toe tag.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because this is a story that nobody in America knows about. And when they hear airlines saying this, they're saying it to try to get some government aid. Surprise, surprise. But it may be regarded as crying wolf. Talk a little bit about what happened here.
We have a two-airline system, which has been in place for... used to be a two-airline system. It was in place since the early 50s or something like that. There were basically two Australian airlines dating back from the 30s, Qantas and Australian National Airlines, which was taken over by a company called Ansett. And to cut a long story short, Ansett last week went belly up. They've all gone into people smuggling. I believe it's a lot more profitable here in Australia.
they just stopped operating on Friday.
What happened is the company had gone through some kind of difficult times, and it had been taken over by Air New Zealand, which in itself is mostly owned by Singapore Airlines. So you know what I mean? It had just become something that it wasn't, and it was. I mean, my goodness, to have something run by like a New Zealand company, it really just like...
Is there going to be war between Australia and New Zealand? Can we look at this war to entertain us?
There may be some collateral damage, but you've got to remember also our pilots here, it's fun. Have you noticed that a lot of our pilots just wear shorts?
No.
I just mentioned Billy Connolly often says he just doesn't feel safe in Australia. When your pilot has shorts, you do not feel safe. But... we really don't know what's about to happen here with our other airline. There's the vultures are circling. You know, there's, you know, your Richard Branson and people like that are starting to hang around. But he's already got his own successful airline here.
It is worth mentioning along the way that one of the people who allegedly bled Ansett Airlines dry before selling it to Air New Zealand was an old friend of mine, Rupert Murdoch.
I was reading the history, the obituary. I was reading today's obituary, and I realized that that there was a Murdoch connection somewhere along the line.
Yeah,
he bled it dry, did he?
Well,
that's,
you know,
not like him.
No, it's not like him at all. He usually is so apt to enhance his assets. No, he apparently bled it, milked it, did something to it that wasn't good.
Yeah.
But so airlines can do that, and what they're saying in the States is that, you know, people are afraid to fly. I would think, me personally, I'm about to get on a plane, so maybe this is self-serving or just cheering myself up, that this would be about the safest time to fly. in the United States or to the United States? Would
you think? Well,
I mean, if they're not on guard now,
you'd think that they'd be pretty good there.
Yeah.
In fact, I thought the security is pretty good. I was in America about 2 weeks ago, and I was sitting next to a person. I said, "This has got to be a CIA agent." Oh, you know, LL have those agents mm-hmm. on board that mm-hmm. are secret. You don't know. Because I'm saying she looks a lot like Morgan Fairchild. I mean, is that a Morgan Fairchild mask? It actually was Morgan Fairchild, and she was very nice.
She is very nice.
She spilled a drink on my shoe. She didn't lick it up or anything, but she was very nice. And I thought we looked... I was traveling with a friend of mine, and I thought we looked kind of suspicious when we were running late towards the... And we were physically running towards the plane, and, you know, we were sweating, and we kind of didn't look very savory at all.
Mm.
And it was just like... in fact, they hardly checked... I mean, they did check out, you know, our tickets and stuff, but we were almost so late that they almost sort of let us sort of run straight into the plane, and I could have terrorized Morgan Fairchild with a cardboard cutter or whatever. But
you could have spilled a drink on
her. I must admit, I was surprised in the US, I was surprised with the amount of travel that we did, how it was kind of pretty lax.
Here's my favorite U.S. airport story, which suggests whatever it suggests. I was entertaining at a corporate conference a couple years ago. This was an American company which thinks that it can inspire its employees once a year by bringing them to a really beautiful part of the world in the United States and bringing some allegedly talented people there just to sort of shower them with our talent, and that will inspire them to create better goods in the upcoming year. And so the guests that you're showering them were me, for whatever reason, Spalding Gray and a band called Morphine. I don't know if you're familiar with them. And we all did our thing, and the conference went on, and we're going back home, and we're in the Portland airport to fly out, my wife and I, and we see somebody trying to chase the band in the Portland airport, which, in fact, that's what I knew was going on. What I saw was somebody running through the airport yelling, "Morphine! Morphine!" Nobody stopped her. Now, if you can run through an airport yelling "Morphine" and not rouse anybody...
You're doing okay.
Things were a little bit loose. Are you scared?
Right now?
No, not of me. I know, you're going to go out in the street at 4 in the morning.
Kind of. If my trip to the United States was not 2 weeks ago and is in 2 weeks' time, yeah, and I'd rethink it. You know, got the kids at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it's like here. It's like a big place with a big backyard. It's kind of safe here. You know, we're so removed. But in a way, not only am I scared. You know, if I have to return to the U.S. or, you know, go visit my family again in Italy or something like that. But even here, you think, you know what, anything can happen. I mean, because we do have, you know, the Australia is made up of a lot of different ethnic mm-hmm, groups mm-hmm. and there are tensions at times. And there are tensions at the moment. There are unfair things being said to, you know, our very sort of peace-loving Muslim community here. And things are kind of get a bit weird. I guess I'll look over my shoulder just a little more.
This country seems to me, I was saying this to you on the phone this afternoon, seems in some ways like an almost alternative universe version of the United States, because a lot of the things that are boiling in the normal cauldron of the United States seem to boil here in a different way. There's this story that is not related to any of this, but it's about the head of the Aborigines tribal mm-hmm. group in this country, Jeff Clark, who was alleged by a prominent, distinguished local newspaper to have been guilty of 4 cases of sexual assault some 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And the story has just raised an awful lot of issues about, well, the Aboriginal women are unbelievably more likely to be the victims of domestic abuse, but this is interfering with the process of reconciliation between whites and Aborigines. Sex and race in this country seem to be almost the same explosive combination that they are in the United States.
Yeah, and it's really hard here to separate them from their political value, because you don't know where all these allegations are coming from. They always seem to happen conveniently close to a time where, you know, the government is being pushed to say they're sorry for their past wrongs to the Aborigines. Or, like, at the moment, even this morning, I heard the Prime Minister talk about how now we have to be more vigilant about guarding our shores because of all the things that happen overseas. So, in Australia,
very conveniently, right after he's sent some boat people packing.
Yeah, all the way to, you know, God knows where. Well, you know, refused to take them here, but is quite happy to spend $20 million to repatriate them in Nauru or New Zealand or somewhere. It's very. I mean, we have a very difficult situation here.
Have you said you're sorry yet?
Have I said I'm
no,
sorry?
No, not yet? You personally. White Australia said it's sorry?
No, it hasn't. It's expressed itself in many ways. People have expressed themselves in many ways, saying they're sorry, but there has been no official government apology. And it's all got to do with, you know, legalities. What does that mean? If we say we're sorry,
then they can sue you.
There's a bit of, you know, high court action sort of probably going to happen. Also, it's, you know, we sit here and we go, well, you know what,
what did Australia do at the racism conference in South Africa a couple of weeks ago?
We probably didn't even turn up. I really don't know. We have a really good record with racism overseas, but we struggle a bit here. Again, it's that whole myopia thing, you know. I think people overseas can tell us all sorts of things about ourselves, but it's hard for us to admit them when they happen here.
Hmm. So you won't be flying to... Where will you be flying? You fly all. Australians travel more than any people on Earth because it's so far away. So they're great travelers.
We have very long flights. I wanted to say hello to a friend of mine in Atlanta, who
we're not on the air in Atlanta,
aren't we? Well, I'm sure he's probably.
Oh, okay.
Well, can I just tell you about him then? In that case, I can tell you about him more.
In 1 minute, yes.
Okay, he basically studied theology because he thought there was a loophole in the thou shalt not kill commandment.
And was seeking to exploit it or just understand it?
I didn't hang around for the end of the sentence. I was gone.
So, hello to him, and be nice. Santo Chilaro, Australia's number one comic.
But I'm not from Wagga Wagga.
Thank you so much for sharing this this little campfire.
Thanks. Can people understand me? Because usually what happens is... American people never understand me, because what happens in the first sentence that I say, they're actually thinking, he's speaking in a different language. And by the end of the time I get to the end of the sentence, they say, I beg your pardon.
You know what it is? It's because everybody in the world speaks faster than Americans, including Australians.
Crikey! There's a blue-tongued lizard about to get us!
There you go. People understand that. Thanks so much, Santo Chilaro.
Thanks, Harry.
Live in Melbourne, Australia at 3, almost 4 in the morning.
You choose your path and walk with pride. Things you love are often cast aside. Never ever meant to hurt you. And would it be wrong to ask you to guide me home and to help me on? I walk alone, this is my choice. In my darkest hour I am another voice. I never ever meant to hurt you. To help me on. This wild still so alone. Walk this wide, wide road, 'cause the older I get, wider, wider it becomes. It becomes. So if you love someone, you should help them on. That's why I
Ladies and gentlemen, in conclusion, a United States Air Force general is quoted in today's Washington Post as saying of a plane flying into the Pentagon, quote, "We never thought of this," unquote. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from Down Under.